It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on assignment. Chaz Simba, I think, at Kansas deer hunting. So he'll be back with some stories. And, of course, being that opening day of deer season is today, we're not going to talk about it because you're probably in the woods deer hunting as well. And we'll talk more about that on next week's show. So we talk a lot of fishing on this week's show. And good to get this man on the show. It's a few times a year. It should be even more. He's with Cold Blooded Fishing, our buddy Captain Richard Rutland. Thanks for coming on.
You, man. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's good to have you on. And I want to say this at the beginning, too, because I talk about this stuff during the week on Midday Mobile all November long. We've done this for about a decade here. It's Veterans Month, and we talk to local veterans. I get a twofer, y'all. I get to talk fishing with Richard and thank him for his service. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, man. Always appreciate everybody saying something to me about that. But always my standard response is the Navy did a lot more for me than I did for it, man. I was a mess as a 19-year-old, and I went in a young boy and came out a man. It was an unbelievable experience. Just happy to have had that experience and happy to do it.
Yeah, you know, and I talk about that with folks. This has been, no matter who I'm talking to who's served, I like to get your enlistment story. So you said, yeah, you were one of those that needed some direction or structure. I mean, how did you decide to enlist in the Navy?
Yeah, I tried college for a little bit after high school, and just very distracted, as you put it. Wasn't my time, wasn't my focus. And ran into a friend of my mother's who had been in the Navy, and she told me all these great stories about everything that she did, and it excited me. And I had needed to take a different direction. I was about to get thrown out of my house, I feel like. and I went to the recruiter, and I think I walked in the Air Force office first. They wouldn't take me for whatever reason, and walked next door to the Navy. And they had me gone in 2 weeks from when I walked in. They sent me. I was off to boot camp in 2 weeks, which is about the fastest I think anybody ever got into the military. But it was a really, really quick, turnaround to go in and get up to boot camp. And man, was boot camp an eye opener. I remember getting up there and walking out of the Chicago airport and feeling that Chicago cold, because I went up there in December, and then we got to Great Lakes, and the yelling and screaming started. I was like, "Whoa, man, this is gonna be a ride." Hold on.
I think a lot of us have some idea just from watching movies and stuff what that's all about, but talking to every one of y'all, you didn't really understand it until you got there, right? I mean, how intense it would be.
Yeah, it you definitely had to quickly get a sense of respect for who was in charge. And because it was one of those things, you know, if one of you messes up, you all mess up. You're all doing push-ups. You're all doing 8-count bodybuilders. You're doing sit-ups, all of that. So we all had to kind of come together as a team. And then, you know, they just stress so much of attention to detail to you, down to how you fold your underwear, exactly how to make your bed, how to take a shower. They break you down and build you up exactly how they want you to perform. And it's amazing how throughout my entire career in the Navy, which wasn't long, I only did 4 years, but how much that attention to detail just carried over into everything you did. I worked on helicopters, and so you as a maintainer, you have folks' lives in your hand. Mm-hmm. as you're putting screws in and tightening bolts and putting safety wire on things and all of that. So and then they also, I'll never forget either, when anytime you're reading a manual, something that was written in red, they always said that was written in blood. You know, someone lost their life, and this is why this is this way. You know, so pay most attention to this.
Those helicopters don't have much of a glide ratio.
No, sir.
So you said you needed that structure. You get in, not only are you you're learning the structure down to the last, but you're learning that attention to detail. I mean, that's some grown-up stuff. You're learning adult stuff.
And it seemed, at the time, it seemed kind of ding-dong, you know, kind of stupid to a 19-year-old. Why I need to fold my underwear exactly like this and get yelled at if you didn't. But it really matters. Man, I can't tell you how much it carried over into civilian life afterwards, you know, into what I do today. Paying attention to all those little bitty details is where it's all at.
Yeah, and I think it's something that we've said so many times, but it's worth repeating. I think that's why veterans do so well when they come in. You know, companies go, hey, I'm interested in hiring veterans, sometimes for the skills they already have, but I think a lot of times for just what you said, they know how to work as a team. They got a mission to get things done. They have the discipline to show up and work. I mean, it breeds success.
Yeah. I thought of something else too. My helicopter squadron was attached to a aircraft carrier. And so that's when I went on deployment or went anytime we did anything with the ship, I was on an aircraft carrier. And the majority of my 8-month cruise, I was on the flight deck. I was a flight deck troubleshooter. And what they beat into your head working on the flight deck was head on a swivel, you know. And still to this day, my head is on a swivel. My customers are always asking me when we're driving, when I'm running the boat, running around, you know, I always feel like it's just as important to see what's in front of me as it is behind me. You know, they're like, what are you looking at back there? What are you looking at? What's going on? You know, and I'm like, nothing, man. My head's just on a swivel, just making sure nobody's coming up behind us or nothing's about to happen, you know. And it bodes me very well these days to have my head on a swivel, you know. I see fish slicks and things jumping and all that when you probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, no, listen, the fishing part of it's cool, but just the safety part, too, of situational awareness. Boats don't have brakes. There's a lot of people that are not paying attention. It's, you know, you absolutely need to do that. I don't have your training. I'm just, you know, never served, but to watch behind and to the sides and stuff, I do the same thing. And it's like, I may be in this, shame on me, but I may be more in tune and pay attention when I'm in a boat than I am in a vehicle. You know, and I should be the same of always, but I don't know. I make more assumptions, I guess, on the roadways than I do on the waterways. On the waterways, I think anything can happen.
That's exactly right. And it's amazing to me when I'm transiting around, you know, like in the Delta right now where we've been fishing a bunch, which I feel like we're about to get into in a sec.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny when I'm overtaking someone, how they don't even know I'm there until I'm passing them, until I'm right next to them going by, you know. And I feel like I always know when somebody's coming up behind me just because of that, you know, or just being aware of your surroundings. You can never be too safe on the water.
100%, and that is for sure. But yes, we are going to transition into some fishing talk, but I want to say, you know, to you, and I say to all our veterans, thank you for your service. And in your case, you're saying that the service gave back to you as much as you gave to it, or maybe more.
Yep, it sure did. Thank you.
And this is another thing I've been asking our veterans all month too. You say somebody listening today finds themselves in the position you were in, or parents of that person. What's your recommendation thinking about their children enlisting, or that person that's listening right now enlisting? It sounds like it's a positive from your perspective.
I would be nowhere near where I am in life right now if it had not been for that experience. And I would never steer anybody away from joining any of the branches of the military. I think they all have something great to offer. And like I said, you joke around that I'd be dead in the ditch somewhere if it hadn't been for that decision that I made.
Wow.
And like I said,
big. It's not just, hey, it made it a little bit better. You're saying it's made the full difference of your life.
it was life changing. I just remember my dad telling me when I came home, he could tell when I walked in the door from being at boot camp. He said, you look like a man, you know. He's mm-hmm. like, you left my house as a kid, and you're a man now, you know. He said just my whole stature, the way I stood, the way I held myself, the way I spoke, everything, they reprogrammed me, you know.
Yep.
And it's just absolutely amazing experience. And I think all the places it took me, I went around the world, literally halfway around the world on a deployment, got to see all types of different cultures, went to a bunch of different states and cities in the states that I got to experience, learned how to work with folks from every walk of life, every race and color and all of that.
Awesome.
Got to just really, really, really good life experience. A great way to jumpstart my life.
Yeah, and it's nice now, too, when we go fishing with Richard, to know, a Navy man that who spent time on the deck of a carrier is running that boat. All right, we're going to come back and we're going to get into what the real meat of it is, although I could sit and talk about this with Richard all morning, but we're going to get into the meat of fishing right now. Like you said, he's in the Delta fishing. That's what it's all about. If you're not up a tree deer hunting, you're probably like me. You're thinking, man, it's that time of year. We'll get into it with Captain Richard Rutland from Cold Blooded Fishing when we return. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Just me this week, Mike Ward on assignment. We'll get his report next week on the show. I'll give you he'll give you Kansas report. I'll give you Alabama deer hunting report. And as always, you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So make sure you put the outdoors one on there, because we've got the main Facebook page for the station, but we also have a separate one for the outdoors. You had a good hunt, you want to show off some pictures or whatever, post them there. We'll talk about them next week. All right, talking fishing this week, and Captain Richard Rutland, who, once again, a veteran, a served our nation, and a big thank you to you. And he continues to serve all of us by finding us fish out there, man. It is late November, Causeway fishing. First question is, when did it get started this year? Because I have been remiss. I have not been out there. When did it really kind of transition north of the Causeway? When did it start happening?
Man, they've been kind of up for a while. It was a little, I wouldn't say, I guess, premature for what we're used to as far as them being above the Causeway. But it's been good that way for probably about a month at least. Above it. Heck, right now I'm still catching fish below and above the Causeway.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
So they're kind of everywhere. I really thought that cold front that we had early last week was really gonna shoot everything way up, and it did push some fish up there, but there's still plenty of fish on the south side too, so they're kind of everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that, you know, that we got a heck of a, it was like we got a taste of winter and went right back into, like, you know, early fall weather-wise. Was it enough to drop the water temperature very much? What do you see? I mean, did it make a big change?
It did. It did initially. It dropped down into the mid-50s to 60 degrees, but it came right back up. We're up to about right around 70 right now. So upper 60s, lower 70s. So it came right back up.
Now, with
it was
that,
very, the cool was very short lived.
Okay, so did the fish, you know, that, and we could talk about this because I want to pick your brain on the, you know, going forward too when it does get cold. Did those fish go off into deeper water and stay, or are they back up in the shallow? Are they, where are you seeing them? Are you finding, because you said south side? If you're on the south side, there's a lot of that stuff that's not deep.
That's correct. Yep, and they did initially. Everything was happening in the main river channels, lots of bird schools or lots of deep water points and drains and stuff is what I was fishing. But As soon as that water temperature came back up, they're right back on the flats, you know, seeing them in some of the big bays up there. And then, like you were talking about on the south side, you know, they're out there in 2 and 3 foot of water on the south side of the bayway. Still lots of activity out that direction.
And so, obviously, shrimp are still there, right? They haven't, I mean, they're still...
Lots of shrimp. I would say probably about 60 or 70% of the fish that we're catching right now have all got whiskers hanging out of their mouth.
Love it.
You know?
I love it, man.
Yeah,
and so it's good to know it started earlier, too. You know, we've talked about this. I grew up fishing the Delta, and, you know, October for us used to be kind of, it got started in October, you know, and then there's been some years that it kind of just sputters and doesn't get started as early. So to hear that it got started early, I like that. That's great.
I think that really, that's been the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten kick-started really early, early October or even a little before that. It seems like last year, like late September, we were catching fish just south of the causeway.
Yep.
And I just kind of attribute all that to the number of fish that we have around right now. It is unbelievable how many fish I feel like are in our system. You know, you always start to kind of worry about it. Like September is always a transition month. I feel like September, October is a transition month when you go from having like a summertime pattern to a fall pattern. And this year, it blows my mind how many fish are up in that system right now. Speckled trout, white trout, and redfish are just in unbelievable numbers. And I'm just like, man, how many fish can there actually be up here? You know what I mean? Because you could sit in one spot for 2 hours and catch a fish on every single cast. You're like, golly, when's it going to end?
Yeah, it's great. And I want to, you know, I mean, it is the time of year that the trout make themselves, you know, pretty easy to catch. But it's also, you're talking about those numbers as somebody's out there all the time. I got to ask you, so you think it's just the total numbers improved from the past? I mean, do you think that's the regulations put in, or we're just on a good cycle? Like, what do you attribute that to?
I think it's definitely a good cycle. I think definitely the limit change several years ago has helped the fishery in a big way. But I also think that we're on some good years right now. We're having some good year classes of fish come along, and I've seen that since I started guiding. It's very cyclical. You have down years and you have good years. And something that I remember jumping off the page to me whenever we went and sat in some of the public hearing meetings with Marine Resources when we did change the year we did change the limit from, you know, went to a slot and from 10 fish to 6 fish on speckled trout. The thing that jumped off the page was that they did their surveys, you know, where the Marine Resources is at the boat ramp asking you how many fish you caught and check a few of the links and all that kind of stuff. They overlaid that with the year, like with how much fresh water influx we had from the Delta, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what the survey showed was that on years that we had really wet years, where it was really, there's a lot of fresh water coming out of the Delta and the bay would flood out and we'd have wet springs with a lot of fresh water, the speckled trout did not do near as good as when we had drier years. And then when you go and look at the science side of it, speckled trout in general, when they want to spawn, they try to seek the saltiest water that they can find, the highest salinity. And they say that that helps their eggs become more buoyant and float. You know, when you scuba dive, the saltier the water, the more weight you got to put on so that you sink better, all that kind of stuff. Makes a lot of sense to me. And then the current carries them into the marsh and to the places where they can live and grow up, juveniles.
So from that year, then you go forward, I mean, until you get, what do they say, like, from that year class, when do they become a 15-inch trout? How long do we have to go?
Yeah, so they get to 12 inches in a year, and that's when they become spawning size, is right at the one-year mark. And so a 15 inch fish is probably like a year and a half or maybe a little less than that. They grow really fast to about 20 inches and then they start to check up after that. I want to say a 20 inch fish is like a two to three year old fish. A 22 inch fish is a 3 to 4 year old. And a 24 is about a 24 incher, which is right around 5 pounder, 4 or 5 pounder is about a 4 or 5 year old fish. Their lifespan is only about 7 to 8 years max.
So they got a big run. And that's a thing too about that slot and protecting those big fish. A lot of us did that on our own before. Just, you know, for me, it was the redfish mentality that I was taught with the recovery of redfish, right? That the big bulls produce so many more eggs, you know, so many more little fish, it was worth keeping them. But it now is law to keep them. So I wonder if we're going to see that. Like, the more big girls that are out there, the better year classes we have going forward.
Right. So the way I look at it, and I love the way the state has taken their stance on speckled trout, and now with redfish as well, you know, because we're not allowed to harvest and oversize redfish anymore.
How much of that was going on? I mean, I was surprised because I didn't know anybody who kept bull reds, but then talking to folks with the state, they said, well, here are the stats. There were a lot of people kept them.
Oh yeah, a lot. I know just like when the bull red fishing's really good, like out there on Dixie Bar in the spring and in the fall, I was seeing people net and harvest fish all the time out there. And then of course you have your pier fishermen too, you know, like the guys at Cedar Point and Gulf State Pier and places where a bull red is accessible. Definitely walk down some of those piers and see big redfish tails hanging out of coolers down there. So it was definitely happening. But to get back to speckled trout, what I like about how we have it set up now is you've got lots and lots, huge numbers of 15 inch fish and smaller out there, right? That are spawning every spawn cycle. And then you've got, and so they're putting out a bunch of eggs as big numbers. And then you've got your oversized fish, your over 22 inch fish that they put out an exponential number more eggs than a 15 or 16 mm-hmm. inch fish does. And so you've got both ends of the spectrum there replenishing the stock every year. And I just think that's wonderful, you know, that you've got both ends of that. I think moving that 1 inch helped a lot, and then I think cutting it off at the top end on that 22 inch really does a lot for the fishery.
And you say, I mean, this year they're packed in.
It is unreal how many fish are up there, and it's all sizes, you know. There's lots of good 20 plus inch fish up there. And then there's lots of like just below the legal limit. I swear the fish knew when they moved it from 14 to 15 inches, you know, it was like all the fish were 14 and, or 13 and three quarters. Now they're
14. Yes. I've seen the same thing.
Yeah. You know,
when we come back, we're going to talk about catching those fish with Captain Richard Rutland from Cold Blooded Fishing right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. Yeah. Know it's opening weekend of deer season, so that's why we're talking fishing. And it's always great to talk to our friend Captain Richard Rutland and talk about some Delta fishing. Although, it sounds like not just Delta, North Bay and Delta fishing right now. You said still catching them south of the causeway, man.
For sure. There's just an incredible number of shrimp around as well. And I would assume there's probably a couple of things affecting that. I know that the shrimping industry domestically is in the tank because of all the import shrimp that are coming in from other from other countries, so there's not as many people shrimping. It seems like there's more croakers and more shrimp that I've seen around in a long time, you know, and you definitely not seeing all those shrimp boats all over the place, but there is a lot of shrimp in that delta right now. It blows my mind.
Well, I want to
shrimp are up there right
yeah,
now.
And I want to get into catching these trout, but you said something I want to talk about before we get into that. You said the number of 20-inch plus fish up there. So I got this question for you. A listener of the show, he sent in a picture the other day of fish he caught north of the causeway, over 5 pounds. And he said, hey, have you ever caught one up in the Delta that size? And it's funny because it's with the thousands of fish I've caught in the Delta over a lifetime, they stand out when they're that big. I caught with our friend in common, Captain Bobby Abrascato, saw it. I caught a 5-pounder that was a buck trout 1 year. With inside the but north of the causeway.
Wow.
Yeah, it was unreal. It's just the weirdest thing ever. This person caught one that's like 5'4". What about you? You catch a lot of dang fish in that delta. What's the biggest trout you've caught during the fall up there in the delta? Do you remember?
I do. The biggest one I caught was on a rattle trap, which is funny because I hardly ever throw a rattle trap anymore. All I like to throw is the slick lure when I'm targeting mm-hmm. those big fish these days, but I caught a 7-pounder on a rattle trap one time in the Raft River.
Wow.
And it was, it was a giant. It was just one of those magical days I'll never forget. It was, and speaking of the slick lure, I was with the owners of the slick lure who own the slick lure now. I was with them. And, Patrick Garmison was running we were running two boats for this one group that we've been taking for a long time. I don't remember which year it was. I could probably look back and find out, but we just had one of those days where we were yo-yoing the rattle traps, as we like to say, and catching some really big fish in deep water out there. It was a magical day. It was 27 degrees when we started. Everybody was freezing to death, including me. And it took us a little bit to find them that day, but once we did, it was on. That was one of those days I felt like we let more fish go than we kept or something like that. You know, I don't think we had a problem getting a limit, but it seemed like as far as the big fish went, we let a lot of big ones go that day. So those big fish definitely get up there. I haven't caught a giant, like a 5-pounder up there this year, but I've caught a lot of 3 and 4 pounders up there. And I've heard of a couple of, you know, 26, 27 inch fish getting caught so far this year. So those big ones definitely get up there. They're a little tricky to target because you have so many distractions up there. There's all those bird schools going off and all that is very distracting.
And you're right, though. I mean, it's like, because I've said over time that the same way I talk about in the summertime, there's that 2.7-pound trout that I call a Dolphin Island beach trout, right? I mean, the fall in that range
right.
there, like the majority. And then, like in the delta, it's the same kind of thing. It's not that don't catch big ones, but it's not the nut, you know, you would think, and maybe it is, maybe there's just so many more mouths in there and it's not like you're targeting with a big bait, but it's not the norm right on a delta trip to catch big fish.
Right. The other thing too, that's really interesting to me in the delta is you can be under a bird school and you have no idea what's going to bite. I just feel like I always need to be super ready to make it count every single time because one cast under a bird school, you'll catch a 6-inch white trout. Then the next cast, you'll catch a 12-inch speckled trout. Then the next cast, you'll catch a 3-pound speckled trout. Then the next cast, you'll catch a bull red. You know, you just have no idea what's going to bite out there. That's what's so fun about it, especially for a lot of my customers that I take. You just absolutely always have to be ready and make every one of them count. I feel like I have special focus up there.
Let's talk about what you're doing. Break this down for people, how you're fishing right now, and then we can kind of transition to how you'll fish once it does get cold and stay cold. So right now, what are you doing? You're talking about bird schools. For those uninitiated, I guess explain that to them, and then how you approach that and how you kind of set up a day to catch trout in the Delta, and redfish too, and white trout.
So I don't ever... of course, the bird schools to me are just a bonus. Okay, like if I see a bird school and I'm transiting from point A to point B, that's just a bonus to me. I still fish like I would when there's no birds around. You're going to set up on points, you're going to set up on drains, things of that nature, and either If it's a shallow area, I'm going to use a popping cork. If it's a little deeper, and I say deeper, like 6 foot or deeper, I'm going to work a grub in that area as well. So you don't want to go out there and, just depend on the bird schools to be out there and to give away the fish. So you can't turn the other side of your brain off, just knowing that there's going to be some birds in the area. But the other thing too that I like to always point out is it usually happens really fast. When you get to an area and there's some hungry fish, you're going to know if you pull up to a point and make a good presentation there in a couple of casts, you're going to know whether there's something going on there or not, and then move if you don't, because the fish are definitely moving around a lot up there at the moment. And then as far as where to go right now, man, I kind of been telling folks, been asking me where to go up there. If you've got a favorite place you like to fish, you need to go there and try that.
Yeah, okay.
Up there. If you've got a point in, a point or a river or an area you've caught a bunch of fish in the past, go try those couple of spots first before you start looking around elsewhere, because they are literally littered all over that delta. They're north, they're south, they're east, they're west. There's not like a bad river to be in right now. The only river I probably haven't fished in is the Mobile River. I've been staying more like Spanish, Raft, Tensaw, Apalachee, Blakely. Our five main rivers that are our four main from east to, from west to east, is where I've been living. And like I said, it's been on the north side and on, it's south as far as like just below within sight of the Bayway all the way up to Gravine Island. So I know that doesn't narrow it down for anybody.
Places. Yeah. And I think people do have their favorite place. I think what's interesting though, watching guys like you, great fishermen, a thing you said, and I hope people hung on to that. I've watched y'all over the years. You don't stay at a place. Like, a lot of people go, well, we caught them here before, right? And I mean, us old Delta fishermen too, we got certain places I'm going to check in a circuit. But some people will sit at a spot and not catch fish because they've caught them there before. Where I watch folks like y'all, you have a certain like window in your mind that these fish are in. If they're in here, they're going to bite within this period of time. If not, we're moving. We're going to a new place.
Right. Yep. I definitely get that mindset with folks. But I tell you, the main thing that jumps off the page at me is first thing in the morning. You know, it's like you take your four or five rivers that you can go fish in, and you toss them up in the air, and whichever one you catch, you go there. And I just start looking for the signs, right? And the big thing that jumps off the page at me when I get up in some of these places when it's going to turn on or it's dead is, even though there might not necessarily be like a true bird school happening where birds are feeding on shrimp, you will see birds flying up and down the river.
Yeah, where they're hanging out. They're not doing it yet, but they're hanging out.
They're hanging out. They know something. They are so much better. I was explaining this to somebody the other day. These birds depend on their eyesight and whatever their natural abilities are to forage on things. They have to do those things well to stay alive, right? And that's feeding on fish or shrimp that are getting pushed to the surface by game fish. You know, whether it's pogies and the pelicans are diving on them, or the terns are diving on them, or it's your Walmart bird, your seagulls mm-hmm. that are diving on your shrimp. They have to find that stuff to stay alive. So I pay attention to just birds flying up and down a river as much as I do to watching them dive down into a certain area.
Yeah, they kind of show you, even if they're not diving. What you're saying is, even if they're not diving right now, the fact that they're taking their time to stay in a certain area means it happened, it's going to happen again, or they're pretty sure they're seeing things that it is going to happen. Like, you don't have to wait on them actually to be like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds and Diving. Just their presence is a good thing.
Yeah, Yeah, I always feel real good when I leave out in the morning at daybreak and I'm going up the Tensaw River, the Spanish River, and I see seagulls just flying north up that river. It's like, oh, yep, they're headed up there to go to the getting spot. They know where it's about to go down at. And that always kind of makes me feel good about what's about to happen. So, hey, yeah, like I said, just paying attention to them, not necessarily diving, but just where they're at. Where they're looking around is a big deal to me.
Okay, we got just a minute here before the break, but I want to start this conversation. We'll pick it up on the other side. What do you have tied on? You talk about slick lures. You got those. What do you get on? What's under a rattle cork? What are you throwing?
Under my popping cork, I'm tying on a baby voodoo. I'm using the chartreuse color and the Bayou Brew. They've been go-to for a long time now. That's a really good go-to. And then when I'm grubbing, I'm tying on a quarter-ounce jig head with a Slick Junior and either Croaker or Swamp Thing color have been my two go-tos this year.
Okay. Well, we're going to pick this up when we come back from the break. More with Captain Richard Rutland right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. And, check us out. Facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Post up your pictures. Maybe deer hunts from this weekend, or maybe you're out trout fishing. I mean, if you're not inspired enough to go now, I don't know what to do with you. We'll continue our conversation with Captain Richard Rutland from Cold Blooded Fishing. You talked about what you're throwing on there, and I don't want to get myself in trouble with the because I am still somebody who rides dirty on occasion, and I run some live shrimp and definitely run live croakers, but summertime fishing is part of it. But in the fall, I truly think you catch more fish on artificials. And I talk to people who go with me too. I'm like, y'all, by the time you go get another shrimp on and pitch it out there, I've got two or three on a voodoo that I've caught and could throw it right back out. I mean, to me, it's just like, it's just more, you catch more fish on artificial in the fall, I think, than you do live.
I can definitely agree with that. I don't even think I've bought live shrimp for a charter trip. It's probably been 2 months. And the other thing you were saying too, as far as the fish you're catching, the thing that I love about artificial fishing is that you're weeding out a lot of your trash fish. We're barely catching any hardhead catfish when you're doing that. You're barely catching any croakers when you do that. I can count on one hand how many either one of those I caught on my guide trip this morning. It weeds a lot of that stuff out because you don't have all that scent and everything else that the shrimp are giving off for the trash fish to find out, to find. And the other thing, like you said, you could catch three fish on a voodoo shrimp before you could catch one on a live shrimp. And I just don't think it matters at all. I don't think the fish are thinking about that. And the other thing too, I think about too, is these fish are gorging themselves right now because they can feel winter coming. They feel the days getting shorter. They feel the temperature trending downward. They know wintertime's coming when all those shrimp and all that easy stuff to eat is gone. They need something to rely on, which is going to be their fat reserves to make it through winter.
Yeah, absolutely. There, and you know, the, I mean, just y'all think about it for a second, like Richard said, but I mean, you go to make a, let's say the bird school or whatever you're casting at, it's a little further down. You got to whip that spinning rod out with that cork. Well, then you just threw the shrimp off. Now you got to start, you know, you got to go get another shrimp. You got to do like, and then you get hit the second it hits the water, but you didn't get a hook in them. Okay, it doesn't matter. You got that voodoo, you got that artificial, you're still in the game. You don't have to come back and reset. So, it's a lot better, oddly enough, to go artificial this time of year. And you talked about, too, the size you use. That's one thing I think is real interesting, is not getting the biggest of the voodoos. You're getting smaller, the smaller size voodoo shrimp.
For sure. That little baby voodoo is, man, this is kind of my story on the baby voodoo. Before there was voodoo shrimp, your artificial under a popping cork was a DOA,
yep.
right? And
mm-hmm.
I remember fishing a DOA, and it was like for every four bites you got on a DOA, you might hang one of them, it felt like, a lot of days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then voodoo shrimp comes out, and our hookup ratios went kind of through the roof, you know, as far as, I say hookup ratio, our bite ratio to DOA went through the roof, right? So we're catching a lot more fish on just the regular voodoo, the original size. And then they came out with the baby voodoo, and our hookup ratios just went through the roof, you know. For every 10 bites you were getting, you're catching 8 or 9 of those fish. And to me, what it is it's just a smaller profile. It's not as much for the fish to inhale, and they get it every time versus, like, trying to get it or not getting it all in their mouth right in one swoop. And so our hookup ratios just went to the roof. And then I think about, like, all the bird schools I've been under this week and the shrimp that I'm seeing jumping on the surface that the birds are getting are little tiny 2 and 3 inch shrimp, the same size as the baby voodoo that we're throwing. So you're kind of matching the hatch there, at least the size of the hatch. That's what they're seeing are those little small shrimp, and so that's what they're getting, and you're throwing the same thing at them.
Yeah, I mean, it's the size that matches the hatch, and I completely believe in the fact that it's easier to get a hook in them. I mean, big time.
For sure. And a little pro tip on the baby voodoo there is we super glue them. You get, you know, like I order voodoo shrimps at $300 a pop. I get like a giant box of them. And the first thing I do is take them all out of the box, and then I get a little tube of super glue, and I peel I pull their whiskers back, basically, you know, and pull the plastic off of the eye of the hook, and I put a little dab of super glue on the weight, and then I fold the plastic back on top of the weight, and then I hang it up on something, you know. You can use anything like a cardboard box or something like that. You can hang them all up to let them dry. And it is unreal when you do that how many more fish you can catch because of the super glue. I don't know if it melts the plastic or what it does, but it bonds it to that weight, that little weight.
So you just pull them back the head and putting the dab in there and then letting it back down.
Yeah, and then laying it back over. And because what would happen if you don't do that is the lure wants to slip down the shank of the hook. And it rips at the very top where the eye holds the lure up. So you're bonding that piece there. And you can go from catching 50 fish on one single voodoo shrimp to 100 fish, and there's no paint left on it. It looks like a clear shrimp. You know?
So, I like it.
You can really get a lot of, for our folks that are thrifty out there, man, go buy you a 99-cent pack of super glue, you know, and to super glue those $7 lures together, and they'll go a lot farther for you. It's unreal.
Strong tip. I love it, man. Tell folks if they want to get a trip booked with you, if you got slots open right now, how they get in touch with you.
Yep, so I got a few slots left in early December and a little bit near Christmas time, and you can get a hold of me on all the socials on Instagram or Facebook, or you can call me at 251-459-5077.
Hey, thank you for being on today, and thank you for serving our country, brother. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
All right. Captain Richard Rutland, we'll let him get back to fishing, and we'll do it all again next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.